Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We are back. Today, we'll give you our winners and losers from NFL Week 2, College Football Week 3. Are Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson's days as top 10 quarterbacks over? We discuss the most surprising 2-0 and 0-2 teams in the NFL. Plus, we each have our betting locks of the week. A lot to talk about today, but joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brett, I think we had an exciting second week of NFL football, and then there were some nice games, particularly one I know we're going to talk about later in college football as well that nobody was expecting, but it's probably one of the best college football games of the year in terms of the excitement and how it turned out. But excellent. We're getting into it. We're in week two of NFL, week three of college football, and it seems to be getting better every single week.
Man, you are so right, Alex. This has been so much fun. We are in the thick of it now. We're starting to kind of see some teams that are starting to separate a little bit. Like I mentioned, we're going to talk about some of these 2-0 teams in the NFL, some of these college football teams that are starting to pull away a little bit, starting to look more like contenders, and a couple teams that, quite frankly, just haven't lived up to what we thought they would be in the offseason going into the year. So a lot of storylines, a lot of players we want to talk about, a lot of stuff to get to. Let's start with that Monday Night Football. Now, the Browns game. I want to jump into this game because terrible injury, obviously, to Nick Chubb. That was tough to watch. That was really, really unfortunate. The best running back in the game is definitely going to be out for a while. And quite frankly, this could be career-altering. That didn't help this Browns offense. That's for sure. So I know I don't want to make excuses for the offense, but that obviously hurt. And I think it did change the outcome of the game to a certain degree. But I want to look at the quarterbacks, Alex, because both these quarterbacks looked terrible in this game. Kenny Pickett, at this point, I'm convinced he just isn't a franchise quarterback. Granted, I didn't like him coming out of Pittsburgh. I wasn't very high on him. I didn't think he was worthy of a first-round pick. He's had flashes. He's had moments where he looked good. The second half of last year, he started showing improvement. So there was some hope going into this year that maybe that would carry over into this year and that we would see an improved level of play from a guy like Kenny Pickett, but it just hasn't looked very good. And some of the blame, I think, has to come back to offensive coordinator Matt Canada. And I think this guy needs to go. If you look at since 2021, every team in the NFL has had a minimum of three 400-yard games. And now, obviously, a ton of teams have had a lot more 400-plus-yard offensive performances during that time period. But if you look at the Steelers in that time period, with Matt Canada as the OC, they have zero. This offense just isn't moving in the right direction, and I think the Steelers need to make a change at the play caller position.
This was actually obvious coming out of last season. He was a person that I targeted that I said would not be back and definitely should not be back. Brad, I know me and you align on how we feel about Kenny Pickett. However, nonetheless, if you have this guy in your building, you need to maximize to find out if he's going to be someone you want to go further into the future with, or with this great quarterback class coming up, do you need to draft another guy that you're going to have to try and get into the system? But it cannot be under Matt Canada. I think he's worn out his welcome. In terms of that, he's maxed out what he can do as an offensive coordinator for the Steelers. It's time to go in another direction. It does not matter if they go midseason and make a change, because the two best offensive players on the Steelers last night was Alonzo Highsmith and TJ Watt.
Yeah, Alex, I'm with you. I think the only reason that they brought Matt Canada back was because they had a rookie quarterback, and I think they wanted to keep some of that continuity and not have a rookie quarterback starting year two, learning the new playbook and learning the new system. From that standpoint, it made sense, but that's about the only thing that made sense about keeping him on, because it wasn't very good. It's not looking any better. The play calling is boring. It's predictable. There's no juice. There's no pop. There's no creativity in this offense, and it's really hurting this team from that standpoint. The Steelers, I think, can change the offensive coordinator. They can draft another quarterback if they decide Pickett isn't the guy. But the Browns, on the other hand, are stuck with Watson in that contract. I just was not very impressed at all. I mean, he was missing layups. He doesn't look very accurate. He had a couple nice throws, but he also missed on several opportunities that he had in front of him. He ran into multiple sacks. Now, I know that the Steelers were getting pressure. There was times where he was still making bad decisions in the pocket. Is Deshaun Watson's days as a top 10 quarterback over? Because we know right now he's getting paid like one.
Yeah, Brett. I mean, and I've said this about a few different players, Michael Thomas included, when people said because what they were when the last time we fully saw them, they were performing at a high level. When you take 2 to 3 years off in the last year that we've really seen, truly seen, Deshaun Watson was 2020. It is now 2023. I'm not going to criticize him for last year because he didn't have training camp. He was suspended. But the last year we saw Deshaun Watson, he was 70% completion percentage, 4,800 yards, 33 TDs, and 7 interceptions in a 4-12 season. You can't say, okay, well, he's going to return to that form. That's not how football works. 3 years removed from when that 2020 season, you have not taken football hits. It's going to take some time. Perhaps he will look a little bit better when we get to maybe week 8 or 9 and so on and so forth. But this was going to be a rough go of it no matter what, because you just simply do not return to form after missing 3 years. The collateral damage out of all of this is going to be Kevin Stefanski, because they can't move off of Deshaun Watson. And this team is built very well. I know Jay Conklin's got hurt, but they have Deshaun Wand at Ohio State, who's been performing as a surprise fourth-round pick. That defensive line, we talked about it in preseason. We talked about how good that defensive line looked. So this is a team that can win some things. I mean, obviously, the gruesome injury to Nick Chubb is going to be a detriment to the team, but then in comes Jeremy Ford and he breaks us up for a 75-yard run. So it looks like they have some guys, they still have some pieces, but this is really going to fall on Deshaun Watson. This is not one of the more well-run franchises in the league, but this can go down and can go down in flames, not go down fast, but go down in flames if they don't right the ship, if they don't get the next right coach, if they don't turn this season around. This is going to be very bad for the Browns.
The Twitter poll question of the week was, who's the best 0-2 NFL team? The four teams that I put on there were the Patriots, Vikings, Chargers, and Bengals. The Bengals ran away with this one with 46% of the vote. The Chargers got a pretty decent amount, 26%. The Vikings at 18% and the Patriots at 10%. Let's start with the Bengals, because obviously it seems like that is the most surprising team. Alex, you and I both had the Bengals as our AFC Super Bowl pick. If you guys didn't know that already, you should be following on social media because that's where we posted it. 0-2 start, both losses were against AFC North teams. I think that's what hurts the most with this start, because since conference realignment, none of the previous six teams who started the season 0-2 versus division teams made the playoffs. So that's never happened in the past. So history is not looking good. Joe Burrow explained that he, quote, tweaked the right calf injury that he suffered earlier in training camp. We know he's been dealing with that injury. He hasn't looked like the same guy, and they haven't looked like the same team. Are we hitting the panic button in Cincinnati, or do you think this is a team that could rebound?
Okay, so there's two things. And Brad, we've spoken about this off air. The thing with the Bengals, and probably why the voting went the way that it did, is because 2 years ago, when Joe Burrow was coming off his rookie injury, they opened up 1-1. He looked bad. He looked bad those first two games, and then they took off and made the Super Bowl. Last year, same thing. He had the appendectomy. He threw, what, 5 interceptions in that first game. They opened up 0-2, and they ended up in the conference championship game against the Chiefs again. So I think that's what people, if we're talking about history, so what's shown us is that the Bengals seem to be the one team to be able to bounce back. The only caveat is, like you said, these are two divisional losses, one to the Browns and now one to the Ravens, who look like they're about to surge. Now, I will say this. I have to criticize Zach Taylor, and I think he, understanding what Joe Burrow was coming off of, he, from my perspective, needed to lean on the run. Joe Burrow throwing 41 times and then the team running only 15 times. And if we take out Joe Burrow's one rush for 5 yards, they only ran 14 times for 61 yards. That's simply not enough. And Joe Mixon only having 13 rushes at 4.5 yards a clip in a close game. He should have run the ball at least, I would say, 20 to 25 times. And this should have been more of a balanced attack. And that's what Zach Taylor is going to need to understand. He's going to have to start to balance out the attack. Because two things are for sure. Joe Mixon will not be a part of this team. And who knows what happens with T. Higgins, who's basically a 1B on this team and probably a 1A on several other teams, what they're going to do with that in terms of trying to bring him back. So this was a year that the Bengals were going for it all with the signings that they did on the offensive line. This was a year that they needed to take care of Joe Burrow. And if he needed to sit out these two games, then he should have sat out these two games and brought him back. So this possibly could look like a little bit of a mismanagement. But if any team can do it because of the past 2 years, especially last year when they opened up 0-2, they were able to bounce back. I understand why the voting went the way that it did.
Yeah, I do too, Alex. I'm not ready to hit the panic button just yet. It's concerning. It is concerning, and those division losses are big. But like you said, we've seen this team start slow, and we've seen them bounce back and still have highly successful seasons. Joe Burrow's got to get healthy, and I think you're right. I think it was a great point that you made about running the ball and taking some of that pressure off of him. Next week, they play on the Monday night doubleheader against the Rams, who've been one of the more surprising teams in the league to start the year. That's going to be a big game because you go down 0-3, now the conversation really starts to shift. Now you've got some real pressure because that's a much bigger hole to climb out of. That's going to be a really fun Monday night game. And on a side note here, Eagles, Bucks, two 2-0 teams. That's a sneaky good Monday night doubleheader. The Vikings had a great passing offense and not much else against that Eagles team. And the defense is bad, Alex. I mean, this defense looks really bad. It's pretty much exactly like I predicted in the offseason. Brian Flores' defense has blitzed nearly half of their downs. And when you look at the numbers here, only 5.6% of their blitzes have produced a sack, which is actually well below the league average. Brian Flores is having to blitz because he doesn't have the pass rushers up front to generate pressure. It's a lot of smoke and mirrors right now. We know Brian Flores is a really good defensive coordinator. He just doesn't have the guys on this squad to really get it done. And this was something I was concerned about in the offseason with this team. It's starting to come to fruition here early in the year. And here's another thing, Alex, that I want to touch on, and I want to get your thoughts on this team as well, because it's an interesting 0-2 team. The Vikings 2022 draft class is starting to look like a complete failure, which is also something that I predicted when I gave it a D-, and I actually considered giving them an F. If you guys want to go back, it's season 4, episode 8, if you want to go back and listen. Their top two picks from that class, both have been active this season, and neither has played a defensive snap. The second round pick has been terrible. Their third rounder has only played 11 snaps. So they don't have much young help here either. I think this is a team that I talked about this offseason that was going to take a big step backwards. Yeah, they can move the ball, they can throw it around, and that's great, but I still don't see this team winning a lot of games.
Yeah, Brad, I mean, I think you hit it on the head. When they don't have the players, now you're trying to overcompensate, and when you try to overcompensate, you make a lot of mistakes because we know the back half of this defense isn't good, and outside of naming Danielle Hunter, there aren't any big names that we can say, or let's just say true playmakers from the edge aspect that can put pressure on the quarterback. And also, a lot of this is Mike Zimmer for years is a traditional 4-3 defensive coordinator, and they switched to a 3-4 last year, and they still don't have the players. They don't have, obviously, they definitely don't have the defensive linemen to do what they need to do with the edge. So that's why there's so much blitzing going on. I mean, Harrison Smith is still a guy, but he's 34, 35 years old. He's just getting a little bit long in the tooth. And those two guys on the outside, I'm not even sure who they are now. I went through a bunch of names in my head that were there. I remember Mackenzie Alexander. I remember Dantzler. I remember all these guys. But now I'll tell you one thing that I noticed about this game. It was actually, at least for me, more telling about the Eagles than it was about the Vikings, because in looking at that game, the Vikings shouldn't have been in that game in terms of when you run for as many yards as they did for almost 300 yards. This game should not have been as close as it was in a 28-34 game going into the fourth quarter when Minnesota scored 14 points. So what I also noticed, just to flip on the other side for a moment, they're not getting the pressures. They're not getting the sacks. They are getting the turnovers. Unfortunately, there were a few fumbles on the Viking side. But if those guys don't fumble and lose those fumbles, this game more than likely probably goes in a different direction. Now, let's remember what happened at the end, and we talked about it. Maybe we can have we could probably have a whole pod about what we thought about what we saw with the Justin Jefferson turnover. That was going into the half. Had he scored, that's a 14-13 game going into halftime. Who knows what it looks like? So I actually looked at this game, and Minnesota did exactly what I thought they would do, which was throw the ball around. The only thing I think Kevin O'Connell did in terms of a mistake was he stopped attacking the middle of the field. This team's real true weakness is at the linebacker position and at the safety position. Those are usually the two positions that will be covering your tight end. They started out early with the tight end. They went away from it. And when they started to come back with the 14 points in the second half is when they started going back to TJ Hockenson. So I think they also made a mistake in terms of the offense needing to help out the defense. They could have had an upset in Philadelphia in their home opener that they didn't take advantage of.
Coming into the season, pretty much everyone circled three NFC teams to kind of be the elite contenders of this conference: Cowboys, Eagles, 49ers. Now, all three teams are 2-0, but I think out of those three teams, the Eagles might be the shakiest. Now, they're 2-0, but right now, I don't put them in the same class as those other two teams.
Agreed. I mean, they got the running game back going again. You know, DeAndre Swift and a homecoming from Philadelphia, 175 yards rushing, and a great call by the head coach in terms of they were throwing the ball a little bit, but when it was getting a little bit close, they really truly bared down and started running the ball and just bullying that and taking advantage of that Vikings defensive line and bullying them with their offensive line. So that was a great call by the offensive coordinator and the head coach to go back to what they do best, which is running the ball, and they took advantage of it. But still, with all the running, with all the time possession, with all the time they were eating up, Minnesota was still right there. But if we're just talking right now around week two, you're absolutely right. Philly does look a little bit shaky, and they look like they can get picked off.
Another 0-2 team, Alex, that I think is really surprising, the LA Chargers. Well, let me stop it there. It is, but it isn't, right? Because it's the same old Chargers. It's the same old story, and it feels like it just repeats itself. Talented team, franchise quarterback, playmakers, defensive star power, and this team just doesn't – they just find ways to lose games. And they couldn't stop Ryan Tannehill the last time he had the ball in the fourth quarter. They couldn't stop Ryan Tannehill in overtime when it mattered most. We can't blame Justin Herbert here. And I keep hearing all this pushback on Justin Herbert and this and that. Look, Justin Herbert has averaged more points in his first 3 years starting than any quarterback in NFL history. That includes Mahomes, Marino, Brady. I mean, you name it. Go down the list. We're talking in NFL history. Yet this team always underachieves, and it comes back to the defense. And the defense is on Brandon Staley. He's the guy that you hired to take care of that side of the ball. He was a defensive genius. Everyone was talking about how great this guy was as an X and O's defensive mind. He's the one calling the defensive plays. I feel like we've been talking about this forever, Alex, but it's just the same story over and over again. It continues to be one of the worst defenses in the NFL. Look at the Patriots. The Patriots have less talent on the defense than LA, yet they found a way to at least slow down the Dolphins and stay in that game. Tua threw for 466 yards and 3 touchdowns, no picks versus LA. Staley's seat right now has to be scorching. And by the end of this season, Kellen Moore is going to be the head coach of the Chargers.
2 years ago, this seat was hot, as far as I'm concerned, when you did what you did against my Raiders, and which was basically a playoff game. It was a win and get in terms of how that game was mismanaged, going for it on fourth down on your own 20-yard line and trying to run out of shotgun on a 4th-and-2 play with Austin Ekeler, didn't understand it. Calling the timeout in terms of what the Raiders were going to do, whether they were going to go for it or whether they were going to play for the tie, which both of them would have gotten. Just poor mismanagement. I mean, we've said it several times. Brandon Staley is mismanaging this team all the way around. And as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the teams that we're talking about, this is literally the most talented 0-2 team. We know what they have. I mean, I don't want to say they have one receiving core comparable, but they would be a top five receiving core when you're talking about Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and Quentin Johnson, and Gerald Everett is a decent tight end. But when you go to the defensive side compared to all of these teams, Derwin James, Kenneth Murray, Asante Samuel Jr., Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa, J.C. Jackson, Sebastian Joseph Day. These are guys with names who have been pivotal players where they were on championship teams like Sebastian Joseph Day. And we know what Derwin James was and now how he's been consistent since coming back from the injury. And Asante Samuel Jr., given the pedigree and what he's been able to do, and J.C. Jackson was a big-time free agent get. And he's simply not getting the job done. I don't understand what Los Angeles was thinking in this offseason when we all know, I mean, it was the worst Vegas pick in the world, that this team should have Sean Payton as a coach, regardless of how I'm going to feel and talk about him later. But this team should have been coached by Sean Payton. I'm not sure what Los Angeles is doing with this talent. You know, Brad, I've said this, we've talked about it. As a person who's a fan of a team in the AFC West, the Chargers have literally been the most talented team in our division for years. I mean, just go through the names. The Junior Seau's, the Sean Merrimans, the LaDainian Thomases, the Phillip Rivers, the Drew Breeses, and so on, the Antonio Gates, and so on and so forth. And they simply continuously fail time and time and time again. And I don't know what Los Angeles is doing. It seems they get the players, but for whatever reason, it's the coaching or maybe one bad play here or there. Sorry, Marlon McCree, where they just simply don't get over the hump. Because this is a team that should have had at least 1 to 2 Super Bowl runs, I would say, within the last 20 years. And they simply can never get it right. I don't know. So as far as I'm concerned, this is now a management issue. It is not a player issue.
New Era Cap is the official headwear provider of the MLB, NBA, and NFL. So why would you wear anything else? New Era Cap is the real deal when it comes to caps with style, comfort, and authenticity. For me, nothing beats the iconic New Era 5950 fitted. It's been my go-to cap for years. So wear what the players wear and support your favorite team in style this season with New Era Cap. Shop the official headwear and get 15% off when you go to neweracap.com/PGFP and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 15% off your order using promo code PGFP. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey there, PGF Nation. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone. Plus, 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. I want to jump to the Patriots, Alex, because when I look at this team, for me, it's simple. They just don't have enough firepower on offense. And they have a, what I would say is a C+, B- quarterback in Mac Jones. When you've got a quarterback like that, you need to surround him with playmakers. He needs to have weapons. You need to elevate him with good players around him, and they just don't have it in New England, and it's really holding this offense back. Now, the defense is pretty good. We've seen that. This defense kept them in the game against a high-powered Miami team. They've played some competitive football the first 2 weeks, but they just don't have the guys. They don't have the firepower. That was my biggest concern with this team, and so far it's really showing up. It kind of reminds me a little bit like Pittsburgh. When I look at Pittsburgh, they're in a similar boat here. They have the defense, and the Steelers actually do have some young playmakers, but their quarterback just isn't good enough. It's a very similar situation with Kenny Pickett and Mac Jones. They're almost like the same guy, not franchise quarterbacks that you can really build around. I think both these guys' ceilings are like top 15, top 17 quarterbacks. In 2023, when you've got all these elite quarterbacks, all these good young quarterbacks all over the league, it feels like, especially in the AFC, that's just not going to get it done. Mike Tomlin and Belichick, We know these guys are both Hall of Fame coaches. Obviously, Belichick's the GOAT. We've seen the steady record of success that Mike Tomlin has had, multiple Super Bowl appearances, a ring, a bunch of AFC championship appearances. We know these guys can coach. But once again, in this modern era, having a really good defense just isn't enough. Because if you look at these two guys, basically, they're 500 coaches. Since when Ben got old and retired and they moved on to now Kenny Pickett, and since Brady went to Tampa, they just aren't winning at the level that we expect from this level of coaching.
Yeah. And, you know, outside of me picking New England to win this division, to me, out of all the teams that we spoke about, this is the one team that I would bank on turning it around. And the reason I say that is because they're in every single game. They come within inches, whether it's a Kendrick Bourne drop, whether it's somebody fumbling. They're within inches of one mistake happening that turns everything over. One thing they need to do, they need to stop the early bleeding. They were down 17-3 at halftime here. If we remember, they were down 16-0 to the Eagles early, and then they have to fight back, which puts Mac Jones, who's actually been playing up to par with these interceptions that he has, are not his fault. These are just balls that are not caught and popped up in the air and teams are picking them off. He's throwing too much for my liking. You know, he threw 42 times. I think he threw 54 the first week. That's entirely too much. The other part of it is the Patriots have always had a solid running attack. And right now, they haven't had a 100-yard rushing as a team or an individual yet. This running game needs to get off the ground to really take advantage of what to maximize Mac Jones to his full potential, because he's not a quarterback that you want having to throw 42 times a game, even though he's doing it now and actually performing very well. Christian Gonzalez is who we thought he was going, who he was going to be. The offensive line is holding up well. But the missing aspect to this team is the running game. This is not a Belichickian type of move. And maybe even calling Jonathan Taylor, because I'm sure, as we'll talk later on, the Colts, as well as the Rams, their phones are now ringing off the hook with what happened this past Sunday and Monday with running backs. And like you said, Belichick is one of the great ones. I truly believe he will turn this around because Bill O'Brien is doing his job. Mac Jones is doing his job. The defense is doing their job. This is now on the running game. They have to get that off the ground to turn it around.
Yeah, before we shift gears, Alex, on a side note, Christian Gonzalez, man, you are not kidding. I know it's 2 weeks, but this kid is absolutely the player we thought he was. The job he did on Tyreek Hill, a guy that we know is easily in the discussion of one of the best wide receivers in the game, the most explosive wide receiver in the game, one of the toughest assignments that you are ever going to draw as a cornerback. Right. He did an unbelievable job in that game, limiting the damage from him. Christian Gonzalez, man, oh man. Yeah, he's looking like the defensive rookie of the year right now. Broncos, 0-2, Alex. Wide range of opinions on this team and what they'd be. But this was a team that everyone was going to be paying attention to because obviously you had Russell Wilson, who they brought over last year, having his worst season as a pro with Nate Hackett. They get rid of him. They bring in Sean Payton. A lot of people were expecting big things from this team. They were expecting the coach to come over and really fix this team, to really fix Russell Wilson. But here they are now 0-2. And Alex, it just might be time to face the reality that Russell Wilson's best football is behind him. If you just look at the stat sheet, you might think, okay, he's playing well. But when you really watch the tape, he looks slow. He just doesn't look like he puts that zip on it that he used to a couple years ago. He just doesn't look like the guy that we saw 3 or 4 years ago. And we started to see some of this decline his last year in Seattle. But then, like I said, he had that awful year last year. And I think a lot of people kind of chalked it up as Nate Hackett. But I even said on this podcast, it wasn't all Hackett because there were plays to be had. If you watch the tape, there was times where he was missing layups. He was missing open receivers. He wasn't making the right reads. He was skipping balls in the dirt on a running back coming out of the backfield. So it wasn't all Hackett. And right now, he's been better with Sean Payton. I really don't see this team turning it around right now. As long as Russell Wilson's under center, I think it's time to hit the panic button, Alex.
You know, I'm going to agree there, but I'm also going to also offer an alternative perspective. And I talked about this and I thought about this last night because I knew this was something I was going to talk about. And I said this, please feel free to go back and check any of the earlier pods when I said, if this does not work, this is all going to be on Russell Wilson and Sean Payton will not be blamed for anything. And I think how we're looking at this, there has to be a lot of context around it. And I say that by saying this, and I'm going to defend Russell here for a moment. Russell Wilson has been in the league 11 years before Sean Payton got there. Sean Payton's style of coaching does not match with the type of quarterback that he has. He's openly criticizing Russ. He's openly talking about stop kissing baby, stop. He's basically trying to tell a person that's been in the league 11 years to stop doing what he's been done. Oh, by the way, when we go back and look at his previous 10 years with Seattle, which has been very successful for him. Pete Carroll, players coach, fun-loving guy. They may have had difference in philosophies, but in terms of how they were communicating and how he was coached, it wasn't harsh. So now you bring in a hammer to where he was being handled with kid gloves, so to speak, with Pete Carroll, the players coach, and it's not going to work. You cannot bring a coach, regardless of his pedigree, to Russell Wilson, have him coach him the way that he is when he's never been coached like that and he's already set in his ways. You know what I'm saying? This is like going to your grandpa and saying, hey, grandpa, you need to start using this iPhone and stop using the flip phone. He's not going to do it. It's not going to be effective. He'll be able to use it, but he's going to bumble and stumble while using it, and he won't be able to use it as effective as you currently use it. So I think there's a coaching mismatch with the quarterback because the quarterback is supposed to be an extension of the coach on the field. And I think Russ, a lot of what I'm seeing, Russ is playing scared not to make a mistake, and that's not how Russ plays football. There was a whole movement of let Russ cook while he was in Seattle, which was set him free. Stop trying to be stringent with what he does because he's at his best when he's a little bit more off script. And what have we been saying? What have the pundits been saying? When the Broncos are done with, you know, as we all know, the first 12 to 15 plays are usually on script. when he goes off script is when it starts to fall apart. He did have a good game. He had 300 yards, 3 TDs, and 1 interception, but nobody talks about it. It was only 58% completion percentage. But I think there's a coaching mismatch. It's just not going to mesh. And unfortunately, Russ is going to be the one that's going to be blamed for everything. Now, they just gave him this deal. I haven't taken a look at the numbers, but I don't know what it would cost the Broncos to come up off of him, because they think they are a team that is in the Super Bowl bubble. But you're absolutely right. Last year, there were plays. I mean, this was a guy that had issues with the teammates a little bit. There was times where he was calling out Seahawks plays in the middle of the huddle. So there was a little bit of nervousness there on his part that he has to own. And there's also things that he's going to have to own this year as well. But this is going to be 100% on Russ, and none of the blame is going to go to Sean Payton. Let's say at least right now, 35 to 40% of the blame needs to go to Sean Payton. He's treating him like he's some young kid that doesn't know how to play football. And I don't think that's going to work, and it's not going to be successful for this team.
Yeah, and when you look at what this franchise gave up to get these two guys, when you're talking about the type of money and draft picks that were invested into the head coach and quarterback, this could get really, really ugly. Now, an 0-2 team that really isn't that surprising is the Bears. We know this wasn't a great team, but they had made some improvements to the roster. They had a pretty good offseason. There was some hope that maybe they could turn things around. And a lot of people were looking at Justin Fields, and myself included, Alex. I felt like this was a put-up or shut-up year for Justin Fields. And right now, it's not looking good. This upcoming draft class is loaded with quarterbacks. I mean, it is going to be a historically deep class at that position. We're talking maybe 5 or 6 guys could go in the first round. I expect the Bears to be one of those teams taking a quarterback in April. It's time to pivot, Alex. We've seen enough. He just hasn't improved enough now in year 3.
The first question I would ask is, if I was to come in and they say, hey, we need you to straighten this out, I would have to ask the coach, who's the lead on this team? Who? Because it's not one of the wide receivers, it's not the quarterback, and there's nobody on defense. Who is the veteran leader on this team that's rallying the troops, that's pulling everybody together? I don't think they have that guy on this team at all. That's the first thing. The second thing is, they actually can track and log how much tape you're looking at by the iPad or whatever it is that they're using in the NFL to see how much tape you're watching. I would love to know how many hours a week Justin Fields is putting in, because, and Brad knows this, I send Brad tape at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I say, what is going on here? There's several things that I've seen watching the All 22 and saying, what is he looking at? Because it's right there. The pocket is clean. Let it go. He's not trusting himself in terms of what he's seeing on the field. If you look at this game, he stayed in the pocket, actually. He only took off 4 times for 3 yards. So this wasn't him just taking off. This looked like he was actually trying to stay in the pocket to see what was going on, and he still was not seeing it. He was making bad interceptions. He was sacked 6 times when he did decide to leave the pocket. And he's simply not seeing the field. He's simply not seeing what's going on. No matter how they simplify it, we saw a lot that they went to a lot of screen passes and bubble screens with wide receivers. That is, you cannot win like that in the NFL unless you have a very strong running game and a very good defense. That is not how this is going to work, and they have neither. So I don't know what the Bears need to do. Well, actually, we know what the Bears need to do. As you said, this is probably going to be one of the more talented, quote, QB classes coming up. So they're definitely going to have to take a quarterback. I mean, Ryan Poles did not draft Justin Fields. He did set him up for success in terms of drafting, in terms of the draft picks and the trades and bringing in DJ Moore, also helping the team by getting extra draft picks so they can surround him with some more. And I don't know if he's putting in the time to see what's going on, because I think he's just out there playing backyard football and winging it as he goes.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it last week, and I'll mention it again. He just doesn't look any different than the guy we saw coming out of college. And we know that these guys, when they come out of the draft, you're looking at a prospect and you're looking at them for what they're good at now, but you're also looking at what they can become. And a lot of people saw the talent. They saw the athletic ability, the arm talent, and all the things that he could do physically and thought, okay, this is a guy that possibly could be molded into a high-level franchise quarterback, and it just hasn't come together. He doesn't read the field well. He doesn't get through his progressions. He doesn't get to his second and third reads often enough at a level that you would expect from a guy with this many starts under his belt. He doesn't throw with anticipation. I give the Bears a lot of credit for not giving up on him and not taking a quarterback with that number one pick and saying, look, we're going to try to surround this young guy with some talent. We're going to try to give him a chance to succeed. I give him a lot of credit. But right now, the results just have not been there. And unless we see some dramatic improvement in the next couple of weeks, I think it's going to have to be the Bears really looking at next year and looking at the draft and thinking, okay, we got to shift gears. I want to jump to a couple surprising 2-0 teams. There's two that really stand out to me, Alex, the Falcons and the Bucks. Now, I know you picked the Falcons to win the South. They were a team that I had finishing second in the South. I also thought that they would be competitive, but I think this 2-0 start, especially that win against Green Bay, was a little bit surprising. They've been really good, and they had that impressive comeback over the Packers. Bijan Robinson is already a top five running back in the NFL. He's already second in the NFL in rushing yards with 180 and fourth in the NFL in yards from scrimmage. This team has some holes on the defense, and I still have major question marks around Desmond Ridder, but there's some young pieces here, and they've got something going, especially in that running game.
Yeah, an exciting game between two truly first-year starters for their teams. I mean, I like what I saw from Jordan Love. He's still playing within the structure of the system, although, albeit that he wasn't able to make a play at the end of the game, but they were missing Christian Watson and missing Aaron Jones. To me, it is only two games, but we have to watch and see how the season matriculates with Desmond Ridder because, I mean, Kyle Pitts is open. Drake London is, even if you don't, can't throw to him in certain situations. He is a 50-50 guy sitting there at 6'5". He's not getting the ball to those other playmakers because as teams start to bear down on their running offense, which is great with Algiers, as well as Bijan Robinson, they haven't even entered in Cordell Patterson as much. But they're going to, once they start to bear down on that, he's going to have to start to make some plays because there's going to be too many one-on-one looks out there with those weapons and Kyle Pitts, as well as Drake London, that I don't see him making. But we'll have to see how that ends up. And who knows? I mean, at the end of the season, they're still sitting pretty the way that they are. Who knows? You can go get Kirk Cousins, and who knows what that offense would look like with Kirk Cousins in that running game.
Tampa Bay is 2-0. The Commanders are 2-0. I think these are two teams that are definitely surprised 2-0 teams. Bucks defense is playing well. They're really getting after it. And hats off to Baker Mayfield. He's playing a lot better than I expected, getting the ball to Mike Evans, getting the ball out to these receivers and playing at a pretty high level right now. I don't think many people thought that he'd be playing this well. I also like what I've seen from Sam Howell so far. Fifth round pick. We didn't really know what to expect from him first year starting here, but I like what I've seen from him. He's making plays, making some plays with his feet as well. And I really like the play calling from Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, the Sam Howell stat line from that game is very interesting. I think he threw the ball 39 times, but 30 of those came in the first half. And then in the second half, he only threw the ball 9 times. I mean, Eric Bieniemy, we are seeing a person that we know was a student of Andy Reid. He's drawing up a lot of these plays, getting a lot of these guys open. I saw Sam Howell, what I liked a lot, just not from fantasy, but just in general, he was getting the ball to Terry McLaurin finally to some of these playmakers. And that was an incredible comeback against a very good defense. And they stayed consistent and they battled back. And yeah, I absolutely agree about Baker. He looks a lot more comfortable. I thought it was going to actually be a lot rougher simply because the Bucs don't have a running game, but, you know, the weapons that they have out there with Godwin as well as Mike Evans, you know, you can really throw it up and those guys can go and get it. So he is settled down a little bit. They are playing a little bit calmer. That defense has ramped it up. Now, the one thing I will say that'll be interesting, that we are looking at the Tampa Bay at 2-0. However, let's remember, Mike Evans does not want to be there. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And once we start getting closer and depending on where they are, could be a trade coming anytime. So who knows what this team will look like if Mike Evans starts saying, hey, get me out of here and what's going on. So I think there's still some smoke there. It's kind of simmered a little bit, but there's still some smoke with Mike Evans. So it'll be interesting to see how this Tampa Bay season plays out.
All right, let's get to some winners and losers for week 2. I've got my first winner here, Alex. How about the Baltimore Ravens? Ravens get a massive divisional win, like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, over the Cincinnati Bengals. Left tackle Ronnie Stanley and center Tyler Linderbaum both missed this game, and they only allowed one quarterback hit, and they only gave up one sack. Pretty impressive what I saw from that O-line. Now, Lamar Jackson, he's looking pretty good in this new Todd Monken offense. Like what I've seen from him. He's making some big-time throws. I like the accuracy and the touch and some of the things that he's doing in this offense. Ravens suddenly looking like a team that can make some noise.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, the number one thing that I like that I've seen from Lamar Jackson over anything, and it's not about anybody making the play, it's about him making the throws. My biggest criticism of Lamar Jackson has always been he's not trusting his arm to throw the ball and allow the receiver to make the play, whether he drops it or whatever. Throw the ball and let's see what's happening. That's the number one difference that I see from Lamar in this offense that I did not see from him before. That's letting me know he's getting it. And as the season goes on, as they get a little bit more comfortable by week five, week six, this is, I think we're going to start to see a Lamar, and maybe what the Lamar is that we thought he would be, not necessarily this elite quarterback, but somebody that can matriculate the ball down the field. The first game, he didn't use his legs as much, but this game, I watched him use his legs and use them smartly, got out of bounds, wasn't taking any big hits, and was then utilizing what he needed to do to get the ball down the field. I think Zay Flowers, you spoke about Christian Gonzalez perhaps being the defensive rookie of the year. I think we're looking at Zay Flowers. I know he'll be probably battling it out with Bijan Robinson, but Zay Flowers looks like a potential rookie of the year as well.
My other winner, Alex, and we talked about him briefly a minute ago, Eric Bieniemy. Washington's offense scored touchdowns in all three red zone trips last Sunday. The offense showed balance. I loved what I've seen in that as far as that regard. 122 yards rushing, 266 yards passing, some aggressive play calling in timely situations. He right now, Bieniemy is really leaning into Sam Howell's strengths, and I think it's helped him elevate his game so far this year. I like what I've seen from Eric Bieniemy in this offense. I think so far, the early results are really promising.
Yeah, I said that this is one of the better coaching auditions because you're now away from Andy Reid, where there's always conflict on who's doing what in Kansas City, no matter what Andy Reid says, no matter even what we saw on the Netflix special, there was always some confusion on who was doing what. And now Eric Bieniemy, with a young, unknown quarterback, doing what he's doing, drawing up these plays, and then also, as you said, scoring three times is all the times in the red zone, showing that, no, I know how to do this. So we can finally dispel his interview issues or maybe even his past or whatever it is that is stopping Eric Bieniemy from getting a coaching job, and which a head coaching job, in which I believe he's already laying in waiting for the coaching job that he's going to take over from Ron Rivera, which I believe is his last year. I believe he will ascend to the head coach once this season is done. So I'm very happy for Eric Bieniemy. You know, Brad, I do have one winner. I want to call out the Seahawks offensive line. The Seahawks last week lost both tackles, and they called Jason Peters, who was probably sitting on his couch eating wings at a whim, to come in and play. And they did not allow a sack in that overtime win over the Lions, which was a desperately win that they needed to stay in the race with wherever San Francisco is going to go. So I want to give a shout out to that Seahawks offensive line, because to lose both tackles who were, well, there was one, the first round pick they expected, but those two tackles they drafted last year who were surprising and they held up very well, both were out, and they had two tackles come in off the street or from the backup, and they maintained and they held for it and did not allow one sack in that game. So that would be my win for the Seahawks, because depending on how long those tackles are out, if they can continue this up, Seahawks will be all right.
I've got two losers, Alex, and they're both guys that we talked about earlier, so we don't need to go on and on about it, but these ones are obvious, and I had to point them out. Brandon Staley, because look, we've talked about how terrible it is, but Ryan Tannehill is a guy who had three picks in week one and then went 20 of 24 against Staley's defense. Every single quarterback that plays this guy looks great. We talked about it. They should have fired him last year. Now it looks more obvious than ever that it was a mistake bringing him back. Staley, it's low-hanging fruit, but he's obviously the big loser here after that 0-2 start. The other one we talked about as well, offensive coordinator Matt Canada. Steelers fans were chanting "Fire Canada" in the fourth quarter. And quite frankly, I can't blame them, because Pickett hasn't been great. He hasn't looked great. I get it. The offensive line is still a mess, but the play calling has become predictable and it just lacks creativity. I think both these guys' seats are getting red hot.
I have one more, Brad, and this is, unfortunately for us, I'm going to go on the fantasy side. We are the big losers because a lot of us, myself included, I drafted Nick Chubb in the first round on two of my teams, and unfortunately for the Browns and unfortunately for the most consistent player outside of Derek, well, actually the most consistent because he hadn't been hurt, Nick Chubb, gruesome injury. Devastating for the team, devastating for the player, and devastating for us, those of us who drafted him in the first round. And then also anybody who may have drafted Saquon Barkley. Though he'll be back, they're going to lose 3 weeks in terms of Saquon Barkley. So the fantasy people out here, I feel your pain, and I'm with you.
Alex, let's wrap up NFL Week 2 with the game ball. Who's getting your game ball for this week?
I'm going to give it to Lamar Jackson. I love what I'm seeing from him. As much criticism, Brad, you know this a lot off mic, but he is doing every single thing that I said he was not doing in those previous seasons when he was actually on the field. I love what I'm seeing. We can give a lot of credit to Todd Monken, but I also have to give credit to the player for actually believing in the system. We know that they brought in OBJ. We know that they brought in Zay Flowers, but he's actually believing in it, and then he's also executing it on the field. I like what I'm seeing. I can't wait to see how the rest of this season goes, and hopefully he's there for the entire season. We know they've sustained some injuries. However, if Lamar is there, this is a playoff team, and I like what I'm seeing from him. So he gets my game ball in terms of what he's been doing on the field these past 2 weeks.
For me, Alex, I got to go with Steelers edge defender TJ Watt. I mean, plain and simple, he was the best player on the field Monday night. Unreal performance by this guy in back-to-back weeks. But on Monday, he had 4 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, a sack, a batted ball, 4 quarterback hits, and a fumble recovery for a touchdown. Oh, and he broke the Steelers franchise record for sacks. This guy is an absolute wrecking ball. And when he's right, man, he is a difference maker on that side of the field.
Hey, Brad, real quick before we move on, were you surprised that you saw that stat line about TJ Watt, given the vaunted edge rushers and the vaunted history of Steelers defenses, that he was number one all time for them?
No doubt about it. I was watching the game with my wife, and when that stat popped up, she looked at me and goes, "Really?" And I thought about it, and I thought, yeah, that's pretty amazing when you think about it. Because you're right, this is a franchise that has had so many big-time defensive players and especially so many big-time pass rushers over the decades. I mean, going all the way back to the 70s, this team has had just a bunch of guys, whether it was the Blitzberg era and James Harrison in the 2000s. You could just go on and on. There's probably at least a half dozen guys that you'd think would have a massive amount of sacks for this franchise. The fact that he is, I believe, in just starting year 7, and he's already broken that record, knowing that he probably has a good 3 years of prime football left, this guy is headed straight to Canton, or at least he's on that trajectory right now. We already know he's a former Defensive Player of the Year and broke the single-season sack record. Now he's got the franchise record for one of the greatest defensive franchises of all time. Really, really eye-popping stuff, Alex. I was surprised, no doubt about it. College football didn't have a huge slate of big-time matchups, but man, it's always a fun week in college football. There's always some surprises. Number one, Georgia, trailed by 11 points at half against South Carolina. Now, they pulled out the win, but that was shocking. Number two, Michigan, only led by 1 score against Bowling Green until the 3rd quarter. Number three, Florida State, allowed Boston College to mount a late comeback, and they nearly won that game. Number four, Texas, was in a 10-10 game against Wyoming until the 4th quarter. Now, these teams all held on, but boy, there were some real scares in week 3 college football.
Absolutely. And I mean, one that we also have to talk about is that Colorado State game as well. But a lot of these teams, this is when you start to overlook some of these teams. Some of these are trap games, and who you have coming up next week, and you can get picked off by some of these teams, but they did hold on and show who they were and maintain their status, but there were a lot of exciting games.
Yeah, Georgia trailed by double digits at half for the first time at home since 2015 in that game versus South Carolina. Pretty crazy when you think about just how good this program's been the last several years. Now, Spencer Rattler is a pretty good quarterback, don't get me wrong, but that's not a great football team. Georgia, when you look at this team, they clearly miss Stetson Bennett and former offensive coordinator Todd Monken, who we just talked about as the new OC of the Ravens and what he's doing over there. They looked beatable for a big part of this game. And for the defending champs, there might be a chink in the armor here, Alex.
Absolutely. I think we spoke about it before. When you come off back-to-back national championships, it's very hard to go to three straight. I think Nebraska may be one of the teams, if I'm going off the top of my head. But when you lose the amount of talent that they lost on those at all three levels, you're going to come in, but there are going to be some young players and they're going to go through those growing pains with you. And you may take a step back, but you'll be right back in it next year. As we talked about before, after regardless of the NIL, but we've seen Alabama where we think it may be the tide turning and they're not going to fall completely off the map, you know, but we're just simply talking about two and three losses a year, not being a perennial playoff team the way Georgia is, but I still think Georgia makes the playoffs, and those players, as they become sophomores and juniors, they'll be right back in the national championship talk.
Yeah, I mentioned the Longhorns. Now, they're 3-0 for the first time since 2012. Look, I like what I've seen from this team, and they've been better than I thought they'd be, but with all that being said, I still won't be surprised when they lose to a middle-of-the-road Big 12 team that they, quite frankly, have no business losing to, because that's Texas, and that's what they do. So, As nice as this start is, Longhorn fans, I'm not holding my breath here because I'm expecting another shoe to drop when it comes to the Longhorns. Now, mentioned Florida State, they survived that scare versus Boston College, 31-29. I mean, it came down to the wire. If it wasn't for a late penalty, there's a chance that Boston College maybe even pulls that out. But with that being said, I still think Florida State is the class of the ACC. I still think this is a team that maybe could crack the college football playoff. Some other teams I wanted to get to here quickly, Alex, was USC. Look, I feel like I got to bring it up every week, but this year there's so much fun stuff going on. We know that, but there's a generational quarterback going on in college football right now, and I feel like it's just worth noting every week because this guy just continues to be unbelievable. Caleb Williams has now completed 55 of 70 passes for 878 yards, 12 touchdowns and no picks on the season. It's ridiculous what this guy is doing at the collegiate level right now. Now, they might not have a great defense, but they might not need it. Now, the defense has shown some improvement. I thought they played a little better last week, but with the way this offense is clicking and the confidence and the playmaking ability, the arm talent, and just the level that Caleb Williams is playing right now, I'm not sure this defense has to be great. You mentioned Colorado, Alex, because Colorado continues to be the storyline of college football. Game of the week, I don't think there's any doubt, this was probably the game of the week across the nation here versus Colorado State, which, look, I don't think anybody thought this would be the game that would be close. Deion Sanders' son Shiloh had an 80-yard pick six. Shedeur Sanders led the game-tying drive late in the fourth quarter, made some big-time plays, some big-time throws late. They went for two to force overtime. The Buffs won in a back-and-forth game, a thriller that went into double overtime, and it sets up a huge game versus number 10 Oregon at Austin Stadium this week.
Yeah, absolutely an exciting game. I mean, unfortunately, Colorado did lose Travis Hunter to a questionable play. And, you know, shout out to Deion because that young man was getting death threats on his personal phone at his mother's home, really calling everybody to stop. You know, it's part of the game and to move on from it. But, yeah, they're really set up with this Oregon game. That's going to be an interesting game to see. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that line is about 20 points in terms of what Colorado will be facing in terms of an uphill battle without probably their best skill player in Travis Hunter. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in the upcoming week, because this will be a game that everybody's watching. And then right after that, they face USC, which will be probably an even bigger game if they win. I mean, it'll be a ratings bonanza for the network. But even if they win or lose that game against USC, those are two games back to back that everybody will be using as litmus test to see what Colorado truly is. So they have the next upcoming weeks, two intriguing games that I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to. But I do want to give a big shout out to Colorado State. I mean, I saw two NFL, they have consistently been putting NFL players every single year, but now that I'm actually getting to see them, Torrey Horton. I mean, the game plan that Colorado State came into where they saw something that said, hey, we're going to take away the deep route and we're going to see if Shador can matriculate down the field without a lot of big plays. That was one thing on the defensive side. And then on the offensive side, whatever they happen to have seen, Torrey Horton and that drag route, I mean, it literally looked like me in a Madden game because I use the drag route a lot. There was nothing they could do to stop that Torrey Horton drag route. I mean, 16 catches, 133 yards, and a touch. I think we're looking at a guy that we're going to be seeing playing on Sundays.
I want to get to some winners and losers in college football, Alex. I'm going to start with a loser. It's the Alabama Crimson Tide. This team is in real trouble, Alex, and it starts with the quarterback position. And I don't think there's a solution on this roster. Now, they're going to go back to Jalen Milroe, it looks like. This team is going to have to lean on the run. They just don't have a playmaker at that position. And in a year where college football is more loaded than ever at quarterback, Alabama doesn't have one. And it's shocking. We talked about it last episode. We talked about an end of an era and how it's really starting to look like this program is in a real decline. I know they won last week. But I'm sorry, that was one of the most unimpressive wins I've ever seen from a Saban-led Alabama team. This team is not going to win the SEC West this year. I think this is a team that we're going to look at the end of the year, and they're going to have two or three losses. And I think the end is near for Saban. My other loser is also in the SEC, Alex, and that's Tennessee. Your Florida Gators with the upset win over Tennessee. To me, it really showed that last year was maybe more of a flash in the pan and that this Volunteers program was way, way overhyped this offseason. They clearly aren't ready to be a real SEC contender. Now, I think they're moving in the right direction, but the expectations for this team were clearly a little bit ahead of where this program actually is right now.
Yeah, I mean, going into this game, we are 12-0 whenever Tennessee comes to the Swamp. So I had a little bit of trepidation because I did not like what I saw from Graham Mertz against early on in terms of the first two games. But now that I'm looking at him, he played a great game. We finally started to run the ball with Etienne, which is key. And, you know, that win also got us into the top 25. So now let's see what they can build on going on. And I'm saying that as a Gator fan, ha ha ha. But I want to see where we can go from here because, you know, Brad, you've been talking about what's been going on in the Pac-10. But if we look at the SEC is down across the board. And as much as an SEC fan I am, as much as we tout ourselves as the premier of the college football, we don't look as strong as we looked the past few years. So getting this win was big for us, even though it was against another SEC team. But let's see if the SEC can start to roll now.
Yeah, I've got a couple winners from week three, Alex. A guy who I know you're a big fan of. And look, I know it was Bowling Green, but Michigan running back Blake Corum ran for 101 yards and now has 6 touchdowns in 3 games this season. Man, he just looks every bit like the best running back in college football this year. And my other winner, Alex, is going to be Michael Penix Jr. Washington's quarterback is a legitimate Heisman candidate. He has been unreal this year. And Washington, who was one of my college football playoff sleeper teams this offseason, they look legit. Now, they blew the doors off Michigan State. Penix threw for 473 yards and 5 touchdowns. I think they have the best offense outside of USC, maybe in the entire country. Man, looking ahead to week 4, Alex, before we move on here, week 4 is loaded with some big-time matchups. Number 6, Ohio State at number 9, Notre Dame. Number 15, Ole Miss at number 13, Alabama. Number 19, Colorado at number 10, Oregon. We mentioned that game. Number 24, Iowa is going to be at number 7, Penn State, which, by the way, side note, Penn State might be the best team in the Big Ten right now. They have been really good. Number 22, UCLA is at number 11, Utah. Number 14, Oregon State is at number 21, Washington State. Man, there is going to be so many fun games to watch. What game are you most excited about, Alex?
It's Notre Dame versus Ohio State. I mean, we talked about Sam in the beginning of the season with that game that he had against Navy. That I liked what I was seeing. And again, I'm a huge fan of that head coach. I want that head coach to succeed. But what we're seeing from Notre Dame, they always seem to be around the conversation. But this is one of the bigger games against one of the bigger programs that they're going to face this season. That's probably going to be a litmus test for them as well. And on the other side of that, I'm not very high on Ohio State at all. You know, similar to Alabama, I see Ohio State, they're a little bit puffed up too, the same way I thought about Clemson. They're going to come back down to earth. It's going to come back down quick.
Yeah, that game's going to be a lot of fun. We talked about Colorado, Oregon. I think Oregon State, Washington State is maybe the sneakiest good matchup in week four. That's going to be a really fun game. I know I'm going to be glued to the TV this weekend because, man, there's a lot of good matchups. Now, before we wrap up week three college football, I'm going to give out my helmet sticker, Alex. This week, I'm going to give it to Malik Nabers, wide receiver for LSU. This was the game against Mississippi State that, unfortunately, I picked wrong for you guys. I had Mississippi State plus 10.5. Unfortunately, that one didn't come through because LSU cruised in this game. Malik Nabers, though, with 13 catches, 239 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Right now, Alex, this guy looks like a top 5 wide receiver in next year's NFL draft. Not a good week for us, Alex. We went combined 1-3 with our locks of the week. Minnesota plus 7.5 didn't cash. I also took the Giants minus 4.5. They had that big comeback win, but unfortunately didn't cover. You hit your NFL pick with Seahawks plus 6. But overall, not a great week. So we got to bounce back here, Alex. Who's going to be your lock of the week this week?
I like picking upsets. So I'm going to take the Commanders over the Bills. It's a minus 6.5. It's a minus 6. Buffalo's coming in with a minus 6.5 and over under 44.5. That Commanders defense, now with Forbes in the back in the defensive backfield, which was the only real key thing that they didn't have. Their front seven was strong, but the back four was weak. But he's kind of fortified and becoming really a surprise pick because he was picked before Christian Gonzalez, which I criticize. However, he's living up to the bill. But that Commanders front four against that Bills weak O-line, and they do not run the ball, I think is going to be a problem for the Bills, and the Commanders are at home, and they're feeling good about themselves. So Emmanuel Forbes against Stephon Diggs, whenever they decide to match up, is going to be very interesting. But this game, I'm going to take the Commanders over the Bills at a plus 6.5.
I like it. I like the value there, especially when you're getting a home team getting 6.5 points. A 2-0 home team, like you said, no less, that front four, that is going to be an interesting matchup for sure because I think they're going to be able to get pressure on Josh Allen without having to blitz, which is going to allow that secondary to drop guys back and to play coverage, and I think it's going to make things difficult for Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. So I like that matchup, Alex. That's a good one. My lock of the week, Alex, I'm going to go to college football here, and I'm going to go with Charlotte plus 28 at Florida. Now, Florida finally gets a big win in the swamp, like we talked about last Saturday night, huge win over Tennessee. Well, now you've got Charlotte coming in, and Florida goes to Kentucky the following week. I think it's a little bit of a trap game here, and this is the perfect spot to take some points here with a big underdog because Florida, after that big win, you know they're going to be coming in, maybe looking ahead a little bit to next week. Maybe not taking Charlotte so seriously. And you know, Charlotte on the other side, they're not going to be looking ahead. Charlotte's going to be fired up because when you've got a team like this, they're going to be fired up to play a big ranked SEC team on the road. So you know you're going to get a great effort from them. And this could be a game where maybe Florida comes in, doesn't give their best effort, and we could see a cover here. 28 points is a lot of points. So I'm going to take Charlotte and try to bounce back, win you guys some money this week.
Hey, Brad, one other game that from a not a betting perspective, just from an interesting perspective, the Broncos go to visit the Dolphins. that can be a game where they're teetering on panic mode, or actually we're going to hit the nuclear button. But I don't think the Broncos are going to win that game going into the Dolphins. That is a pivotal game for them to go 0-3 and go down 3-0, or go down 3 in that division behind the Raiders, respectfully. That doesn't bode well. Now, they end up getting a get-right game against the Bears, and hopefully they can they'll be able to pull that out. But then right after that, they face the Jets, Chiefs, Packers, then the Chiefs again, then the Bills. I don't know what the Broncos are going to look like if they lose this game, end up beating the Bears, but then have to face the Jets, then the Chiefs, then the Packers, then the Chiefs again, and then the Bills. And then right after the Bills, they have the Vikings. And say what you want about the Vikings, that offense will be explosive if everybody's healthy. This team could really only have two wins going into Thanksgiving. And I don't know what you do at that point when you're looking at a team that was supposed to have Super Bowl aspirations and they only have two wins going into Thanksgiving.
Man, that is a great point, Alex. Why don't we lock it up right now? Miami -6.5. Let's add that to the locks of the week, guys. I like it. I'm on it. I'm with you. I love it. I know this was an impromptu pick here, but Miami's going to line them up. That offense is clicking. Mike McDaniel is pulling all the right strings. They've got the playmakers and the offense. They're rolling. The defense has been okay. But more than that, I think the defense could give them problems. Vic Fangio maybe doesn't have all the playmakers he's had at some of his other stops, but Miami at home, I think they're going to hand the Broncos their third straight loss. And you're right. This team, it's going to get really, really interesting because you mentioned that stretch of games coming up. It could get really ugly. And quite frankly, Alex, I think it's going to. I think it's going to get ugly, ugly in Denver. And there's going to be a lot of finger pointing going on. Man, is this team a team to circle here coming up? Guys, that is going to do it for today's episode, though. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Once again, I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter @PGF Podcast.